Just as saltwater drops can create entire oceans, the perfect life is built upon bubbles of imperfect moments. And it is these specific imperfections within us all which lend uniqueness and beauty to the realities of what ultimately makes us perfect, just as we are. Join Vioma Newport as she takes you indeed towards other alternatives, which will encourage you, the seeker, to enlist into the most inspiring spiritual journey of your life. As she interviews some of the most inspiring thought leaders, trailblazers, and light workers of our day on her critically acclaimed radio podcast talk show, The Perfectly Imperfect, with author, writer, and inspiration, Vioma Newport.
Welcome to Perfectly Imperfect, and I'm your host, Vioma Newport. It is a beautiful day today, and it is made even more lovely because we have a very special guest, and she is Ragini Michaels, author, consultant, international coach, hypnotherapist, and an expert in mystic psychology. Her interest in the arena of mystic psychology emerged in 1985 after a year-long spiritual retreat where she struggled with the persistent question of exactly how do you drop your mind and live in the now. Ragini got her answer in the form of the six-step process based on the psychology of mystics, which took place over time. Her research over 35 years of intensive exploration into human consciousness has borne fruit in the form of the Genius of Mystic Psychology online training. Ragini, welcome. We are delighted to have you here today with us.
Thank you, Vioma. I'm very pleased to be here with you. Looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. So, Ragini, what is mystic psychology and how is it relevant to our everyday life, to modern times?
Well, I think one of the notions that people have about mystics is that they don't have a psychology. And I challenged that years ago and thought, how do these people remain undisturbed in the presence of anything that would disturb 99% of us, or maybe 100% of us? And so I started to do a study based on how people who were mystics were able to do that. And it found out that they do still think, they do have a mind, they do have a personality. And I began to make a model of how that worked. And I saw that across the board, mystics had similar ideas about life in their psychology. So I made a map of that and created a model which has turned out to be the Genius of Mystic Psychology. And it's relevant because it shows us how to embrace our imperfections very specifically and how to better be happy in a life that is filled with constant and continual change. So it's very relevant because the idea is that once we can see how their thinking, their psychology is different, we can then start to shift our psychology to match that. And in the doing of that, we tend to start having more patience, more presence, more mindfulness when we're in the presence of our imperfections. So it's a great thing. It's a very helpful thing that has come out of that study that actually helps people change the way they relate to their own imperfections in daily life as well as the imperfections of others. So it's very relevant.
Oh, that's absolutely interesting and amazing because, you know, our perception of mystics is that their thought processes are a mystery to the common man.
Mm-hmm.
And, it is said that for mystics, it's more an issue, they are more the product of divine inspiration rather than thought process or psychology. So for mm-hmm. your study, how did you really come across mystics and how did you study them? I mean, how did you get the opportunity?
I was had the pleasure and the privilege of being in the presence of various mystics in my lifetime, not too many, but I also studied the words of the written words of mystics, some living, some not. And in looking at that with my background, which is in neurolinguistic programming and hypnosis, which is concerned a great deal with language and understanding how language impacts our behavior, it turns out that the way the psychology of the mystic is put together opens up a channel to the divine that is closed to the psychology of the ordinary person. So there's a different way of looking at life that is at the basis of mystic psychology that actually causes the openness to be able that allows the spiritual aspect of our being more room to come forward and take the lead in how we live our lives. So although mystics are thought of as, you know, being blessed by the divine, which I think is absolutely accurate, they still have a mind and a thought process, but the way it's organized and the way they relate to it is different from the ordinary person. And that's what was this whole study was about, was how do you do that? How do you drop your mind? You know, which is the question you mentioned earlier, which is the one that started my whole trek here, because it was very difficult. I understood what was being said and asked of a person who wanted to go home and find God or was spiritual, but there was no way that I was capable of doing it. So that's what drove this whole thing about my mind was in the way. What can I do with my mind to get it to open to the presence of the divine in me and allow it to come forth and take the lead? Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. And in fact, it is totally amazing to know that you've been able to crystallize your research into a 6-part process and into an online training, The Genius of Mystic Psychology. So what modules do you offer there? How can it rewire the brain in a different way of an ordinary person, like myself, for example?
Mm-hmm. Well, normally our ordinary brain is, if you're a human being, your brain is designed to move you towards pleasure at the biological level in order to keep the species going, and it's wired to move you away from pain and avoid pain, so that the species survives. Now, this is a really good strategy for biological survival, but it really is not useful at all for emotional or psychological survival. So the very core key here is we are designed to look at life as an either-or thing from the biological level. Either it's safe or it's unsafe, and it's either it'll keep us surviving and alive, or it will lead us towards death and pain and destruction. The psychology of the mystics helps us to be able to shift that, to be able to have the choice to go and say, I want to be both okay with pleasure and okay with pain. Because that's the key, that's the difference that allows the mystic to open up to the divine inside. And it's not just a concept, it's a way of actually looking at life. So whenever pain and suffering comes my way, whether it's looking at myself as 10 pounds overweight or 100 pounds overweight, or, you know, my hair is not perfect today, or I haven't made as much money as the next guy, all of those things, we usually say, I'm against that. What we want to do in the psychology of the mystics is help us understand how we can be happy both in the presence of abundance and lack, both in the presence of beauty and ugliness, both in the presence of perfection and imperfection. So when you can rewire your brain to do that, which is the purpose of the Genius of Mystic Psychology, then you start having your brain and your psychology operating for you in a different direction, not to change life, but to change the way you relate to this ever-changing flow of experience that is life itself. So that's the key. Did I explain that very well for you?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, how do you recommend mindfulness meditations in your course and online training, or do you recommend books to be read? How do you propose that an individual does that at home?
I think mindfulness training is fabulous. It will help you come more to the moment And I'm certainly glad that I did mindfulness meditation for like a zillion years. It's incredibly helpful. it did eventually shift into a contemplation more than just mindfulness, but the two together are kind of really powerful. I think the psychology of the mystics training is very specific in that it's geared to actually help make this change in your brain and your body, because my background's in neuro-linguistic programming, which focuses on how your language and your behavior and your brain influence your behavior. So the goal here is to rewire your brain to have the option of being both for and against. So you can do the training. Also, I have a book called Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, and Peaceful No Matter What. And that's available on Amazon. And that takes what's in the Genius of Mystic Psychology online training, and it explains it in the book. Okay, so that's an easy book. Again, Unflappable, 6 Steps to Staying Happy, Centered, and Peaceful No Matter What. If you are less interested in intellectual approaches, you can check out my book, The Wildly Quiet Presence of God, Musings of a Modern Marketplace Mystic. And that's poetic musings, which are also based a lot in understanding the nature of duality, or this reality of being perfect and imperfect at the same time in almost every situation. So you can do an online training. You can read a book that's a bit more intellectual in the sense that it explains things a lot, which is the Unflappable book, or you can read The Wildly Quiet Presence of God if you have a more poetic, heartfelt pull towards how you understand things.
That's absolutely brilliant. And which of these is your favorite book, yourself, personally, for the listeners? I mean, which one would you suggest people start with?
Well, as I say, if you're just a heartfelt person and you just feel, I would read The Wildly Quiet Presence of God. I pick it up a lot and I go, wow, did I actually write this? And of course the answer is I did and I didn't. It's just sweet. It's a sweet book. It doesn't necessarily teach you anything about what we're talking about, but it evokes something inside of you. I also love Unflappable because it was the culmination of like 20 years of work. And it, again, was quite stunning. In when I read it again, I thought, wow, did I really write this? And it's really clear. I mean, it's clear to me that there's a lot of energy and support behind this work for us in our modern world. Perhaps it's time for us to get our head around a new way of looking at this flow of life that we're stuck in. Because if we don't, we just keep getting polarized to one part of it or another. Either I'm polarized to being perfect and therefore imperfection is unacceptable, or I'm polarized to imperfection and I become the cynic who can see no optimism left in the world. So when you can get these two, when you can find the middle road, I think my work is more about helping you get an understanding of what is meant by the middle road, which the Buddhists talk about a lot. How do you actually stay in the middle and still be here in the world and go out and, you know, search for your share of the marketplace and have a good relationship and all that kind of thing? So it's very practical. I'm a very practical person, and I really wanted to know what's in all this spiritual stuff that can help me live a better life here and now in this crazy world that we live in. So there you have it.
Basically, you are deconstructing the lofty mountains of spirituality to a more practical way of life, to allow people to live life based on principles of spirituality instead of just being inspired for a short time by mighty ideals.
Yes, I think that's very true, because if you can get the inspiration that you have from the mighty ideals wired into your brain in a way that makes sense to your mind actually starts to feel like, well, maybe there's something to this, and you get a little less pushback from the mind. And I think anybody who meditates knows what I mean by pushback. The mind does not want to sit still. So I think it's important, because life is happening now. We always talk about the power of now, and it's not somewhere else. It's right here. It's right here now, and a lot of that has to do with our relationship to time as well. But I think Vilma, my personal thing that changed my life a lot was beginning to realize that the river that flows, that we talk about the flow of life, and if a river is a good example, it flows, but it flows between two banks, the left and the right. And it doesn't really say, oh my gosh, I shouldn't go to the left bank today, that's a bad place, I can only stay on the right, right? It flows beautifully between left and right bank, and when there's a rock in it, it works its way around the rock, and all those kinds of things. Whereas in my life, what I was trying to do was climb out of the river and go live on the banks somewhere. You know, set up housekeeping, set up a tent somewhere in a beautiful area on the river, riverside next to the river, which takes me out of the flow of life. So I think what changed my life the most in all of this was really beginning not only to understand the concept, but to actually start to see how much these pairs of perfection and imperfection permeate our entire journey. I mean, basically, we live in a world of opposites and duality, and we have no idea how to navigate those. And that's what the genius of mystic psychology is designed to help us learn and then do.
So does it also gel well with the concept of detachment that mystics talk about?
Absolutely.
To be happy in every circumstance, no matter what?
Yes, yes, because detachment is absolutely essential. But I think what we neglect to understand, and I think that this is pretty common, is that detachment doesn't mean you leave your life, right? Detachment, really what we're talking about is detaching from the importance of being either perfect or being mad about being imperfect. And we attach our attention to something that is more of a divine nature than the mind or our psychology or our personality. So detachment is absolutely a part of it. But again, because it's there, where you have detachment, you also have attachment. And one of the things that helped me a lot was realizing I needed to detach from a lot of things, but the key was learning that I could then take my desire to attach, which is naturally human, and put it on my connection with the divine, whatever that was, whatever that is for me or whatever it is for any individual. So it really helped me relax when I realized, oh, okay, I'm still going to be attached, but let me be attached to what's really the most important to me, you know, and be unattached to the daily life outcomes. So it doesn't matter so much whether I have, you know, $100,000 in my bank account or $100 in my bank account. Now, when a person can get to that place, I think that that's a different kind of happiness, right? To know that you can just stay present and in a state of enjoyment, even if the things that you thought were the most important things are not happening the way you want them to. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And in fact, when you talk about happiness, on your website I read that you say that you've solved the puzzle of happiness. And I would love to know, how can one be more happier, for example, especially in close relationships? Certain, you know, sometimes we face challenges in terms of our most intimate relationships. We might mm-hmm. face heartbreak, betrayal, or an abusive spouse or abusive children. So how do those people incorporate the idea of detachment or the sixfold process into their life to be able to navigate these thunderstorms in their life?
Well, again, I think that, first of all, it takes understanding the notion that those kinds of things are going to be in life. They are a part of life. And one of the avenues that a lot of us travel down is the idea that we can get rid of those things in life. And in fact, of course we want to, but to travel down that path, if you want to be happy, is kind of getting you into a dead-end street, because you're not going to get rid of it. And most of the time, happiness is equivalent in our unconscious minds to getting rid of the problem. So from this perspective, from the genius of mystic psychology's perspective, when you have something hideous and heinous like that going on in the world, it's best to understand it as something that is going to be there. And what you change is your relationship to it. So go after if it's in your heart and soul to make the world a better place. But understand that it's still going to be filled with what it is. It's going to be filled with perfection and imperfection, with good things and bad things, with beauty and ugliness. So it's really a change of attitude that you're having on the inside to what's outside. But you know, you've heard the concept of the peaceful warrior, right? Go out and try to change the world if you think it needs changing. But understand, and it's a paradox, and that's why my work is really a lot around paradox, but it's easier to do it, and you can remain happy when you do it, when you understand. It's like Carlos Castaneda in one of his early books, he had Don Juan say, do what you need to do as if it were the last action on earth, knowing at the same time that it's completely unimportant. And when you can do that, it keeps you in the moment, you know, because in the moment is where happiness lies, just being and doing what it is that wants to arise through you. I don't know if that helps, if that's an answer to your question. I do have one other thing. I do have an online little course about arguing and anger in relationship. It's on dailyom.com. And it's a little online course. It's very inexpensive, but it talks about what to do in an intimate relationship with your anger and your unhappiness. It's a very helpful little course, but it's on dailyom.com. So it specifically relates to relationship. Also, the Unflappable book has a lot to do with helping you in relationships as well. But the fundamental thing, Viola, is to change the way you look at the awful things in the world. They are there. They're going to continue to be there, which is very hard to get our head around. And yet, you want to do whatever you're pulled to do to make the world a better place. That's one of the places where you can find happiness.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, once again, I just want to reiterate that it is dailyom.com that Ragini just mentioned, where you can find her course about relationships. Ragini, we will just take a short break to hear a word from our sponsors. And everybody, please don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Never heard of a buffarillo? Why, it's a creature that's half gorilla, half buffalo, an all-hero. In The Lost Azteki Tribe and the Mysterious Cave of Gold, written by children's book author Edward Lofredo, Bob and his merry band of adventurers learn of an ancient lost tribe, a missing princess, and a legendary cave filled with unimaginable treasures. That's more than enough to start them off on a journey across the Western Plains. But what they will find is not at all what they expect. This 5-star rated book on Amazon.com has become known for being an excellent book for children. Barbara Bandel writes, "This book is terrific for kids. Makes learning so enjoyable in this wonderful story." Make an excellent choice of a children's book today by visiting major online retailers such as Amazon.com. The Lost Azteki Tribe and the Mysterious Cave of Gold, written by children's book author Edward Lofredo, is available now. Get your copy today.
Welcome to Sacred Whispers, Linda Roberts and Haley Hinson on Real Revolution Radio. Join us on the show that covers topics in awakening and ascension, energy healing, animal communication, health, intuitive signs, essential oils, and more. Listen as we help to bring forth the inner wisdom that is within each of us.
It's a mindfulness radio production only on Real Revolution Radio.
Five, four, three, two, one. Cleveland, we now have liftoff to a higher level of consciousness. Tune in to RealRevolutionRadio.com, the number one source for independent music and inspirational podcast radio. Awaken, evolve, inspire, and join the evolution only on RealRevolutionRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We are in the middle of a fantastic conversation with Ragini Michael, who is an author, international coach, and an expert on mystic psychology. Hi again, Ragini.
Good morning again. I'm sorry, I was just sipping some water. Glad to be back.
we're glad to have you here again. So, Ragini, you talk about a lot about happiness on your website and elsewhere, and you also talk of a concept of happiness 3.0. So what is it, how is it different from our traditional understanding of happiness?
Well, I've called our traditional understanding of happiness the go-get-it kind of happiness. It's the kind of happiness that comes when you get what you want or you don't get what you don't want. Okay, it's very related to receiving something or not receiving something from the outside world. So normally our society is pretty much, if you want something, go get it. If you get it, you'll be happy. The problem with that kind of happiness is that it's very temporary, because shortly thereafter you're unhappy again, or you want the next kind of the next burst of happiness, so you go after whether it's the ice cream cone or whatever. So that's one kind of happiness, which is our traditional kind, which is what drives us, because we all want to be happy all the time. But these things that we get from the outside, either getting what we want or not getting what we don't want, eventually end, whether it's the great bowl of ice cream or the new house, which becomes old, you know, all of those things. So happiness 3.0 really relates to changing the way we relate to happiness. We have to upgrade it, and we have to upgrade our operating system, to keep using computer technology, to honor the changes that are available to us in how we can look at happiness. Happiness, when you can be happy in the presence of your imperfection. For example, when I can look in the mirror, and I'm a very vain person, my personality is one of probably the most vain kinds of personalities you can have. So when I look in the mirror and I compare myself in my mind to, you know, some movie star or something, well, naturally I'm going to see imperfection, right? Because I'm not a movie star. I don't look like that. So if I can be happy in the presence of that perception, that is a cool thing, right? If I can look in my bank account and I only have $1,000 left, and I can be happy even though it shows me that I'm an imperfect business person, okay, in my mind, I think that's happiness, you know, because then I might have a moment where my mind goes, uh-oh, and, you know, and uh-oh's fine, you know, I need to make more money, or maybe I need to lose 10 pounds for my health, all right. But to dive into despair and, oh my God, there's something wrong with me, and oh, how I've ruined my life, which is how I used to be a long time ago, that made me miserable. So if you can understand that by embracing what we think are our imperfections, which really are not, by the way, it's just the way we relate to them. And that's the different kind of happiness that I'm talking about helping people find by looking at the genius of mystic psychology and learning to become unflappable. So I'm 10 pounds overweight. So I don't have as much money as my next person. So I don't have as many people's name on my mailing list as the guy who's doing, you know, having 5,000 people come to his, you know, his online training or whatever. It doesn't matter unless I make it matter. Okay, that's the difference. Things only matter if you say they matter. And it's not easy to get to that place and have it resonate as a totality in your whole body-mind system. And that's why dealing with your neurophysiology, which is what I'm trying to work with in the Genius of Mystic Psychology, to lay down a new neural pathway in your brain that says, oh, it's okay for me to be both perfect and imperfect. Oh, it's okay for me to have times of abundance and times of scarcity. I can still be happy no matter what's going on. If your brain is wired to hold that I can be happy in the presence of both of these experiences, that's what I mean by a different kind of happiness.
It is basically, the key is to genuinely believe that one can be happy even with, you know, various things going on in life at different points of time.
Yes, and it is a belief. It's definitely a belief. And if you're willing to step into that belief and try it out, then you'll find out that it actually works for almost everybody that I've ever talked to who's gone through this and done, put in the time to get the new neural pathway laid down. Yeah, it's possible. And mystics are part of our species, right? I mean, they are demonstration to us, looked at the way I'm looking at, that there was something different about them that allowed them to have this connection with the divine on a very different way than the average person. And that simply is the way that they were looking at something. Okay, that's the key to the genius of mystic psychology. And then you're able to go with the flow, to use that overworked phrase. But it really is an incredible phrase if you really start to ask yourself, what is the flow? What is the flow of life, and what am I doing when it hits me with a rock, when a landslide happens and my life starts to fall apart? How can I relate to that, and is what Ragini is saying useful? Is it the way I'm looking at it that's determining my happiness or my unhappiness? So it's possible, it's very possible to get to a different place. It does require some time and energy and effort. It does.
Yes, so it is basically important to create the neural pathways of abundance and success and happiness and contentment so that you will stay like that no matter what.
That's yes.
And the way that
you can get those built in is to have a different understanding of what that is. Right? Like abundance is being able to be, is to continue having your patience, your presence, your love, even when you're in scarcity. That's true abundance. It's an abundance that is bigger than abundance and scarcity. It's a bigger kind of abundance. It's abundance of a different dimension. That is what the mystics tap into. And if we change our psychology, then we can tap into it too.
So then how does your facticity six-step process, how can it help our listeners to create those neuropathways and rewire their brain in this fertile way?
Okay. Well, the thing about the facticity six-step process is that it wires the brain because it actually deals with paradox. It deals with having to look at what the set of opposites are that you're engaged in. One thing you're for, the other thing you're against. When you start to go through the process, you're learning how to put those two things as equal. In other words, abundance can't really exist as an idea without the understanding of scarcity. They go together. They're like an old married couple. So if you're hung up on abundance, you can be sure that scarcity is hanging around the other side of the corner, other side of the bend, and it's just waiting for its time to come forth. So the six-step process shows you in six specific steps how to rewire your brain. I'm just taking this one as an example. So that whether you are in abundance or scarcity, you have an understanding of what's going on, and you can ride the shifts and changes of this flow. This is like the river of life in the avenue, in the area of abundance and scarcity. You want to know how to go with the flow of that rhythm back and forth that life has between abundance and scarcity. And that's what the six-step process shows you how to do, and it does it while you're doing it. It actually starts to rewire the brain while you're engaged in learning the process. And you can take that process and apply it to any set of opposites, anything where you're saying one thing is perfect and the other is imperfect. Doesn't matter which set of opposites you're dealing with. The word facticity I heard a zillion years ago from the mystic Osho when I was a disciple of his for many years. And I looked it up in the dictionary, and it actually means, facticity means anything that is unalterable and undeniable. And it's not a word that people use a lot, but it's like the facticity of the rose flower, the facticity of the river. There's an isness about it that is undeniable and unalterable. So I added in also something that is experientially verifiable. And that became the name of the six-step process, the facticity six-step process. Something that was undeniable, unalterable, and that was opposites. Opposites are undeniable, they're unalterable, and you can experientially verify that that's true, and that's the point, that this helps you understand that this is true, and that you can work with it, and that you can have a different relationship to it, so you can be happier in the flow of daily life, which always, it's like the waves. There's a crest to every wave, and there's a trough to every wave in the ocean. You want to be able to stay balanced and centered whether you're on a crest or whether you're down in the trough.
So you just mentioned Osho. So Osho mm-hmm. has done a prolific amount of speaking, and he had an ashram in the United States, and he wrote a huge number of books. I think hundreds or thousands of them.
So yes, he did. Well, actually, he didn't write any of the books. He talked, and then the books were transcribed.
Yes. So has his philosophy impacted your own work?
Oh, absolutely. I was a disciple of him, of his, for 13 years and while he was alive. And the thing that I got, and everybody who was studied with Osho got different things. So, you know, it just depended on what you were, what you needed, I guess, is what you got. But one of the things that I got from Osho definitely was the need to make your mind a friend. He was very big on that. And he was also very big on understanding the reality of opposites, that they permeated our life. We basically live in a sea of opposites and don't have any idea that that's where we're swimming. So what I got out of my years with him was an awareness of opposites at a new level and an understanding that everything that happened in my life was basically up to me. And it had to do primarily with learning how my mind worked and making it a friend instead of looking at it as an enemy, which was kind of different from the normal approach to the mind. And it's a paradox because the mind is, in fact, your biggest enemy for a long time, and then eventually it becomes your friend and actually helps. This is what he said, and this is what I'm slowly finding out to be true. It was a wonderful time with Osho. He was a beautiful being.
So apart from Osho, were there other mystics who influenced your journey?
Oh, yeah. I studied a lot of the mystics, Hafiz, Rumi, Lao Tzu. These were the guys that were already gone. But as I said earlier, I looked at their writings and looked for what were the threads that were common in all of these writings in terms of how the person writing looked at the universe, looked at their life, looked at the divine. So the ancient guys like that. Also, I looked at people like current mystics like Joseph Goldstein, Sharon Salzberg from the and Jack Kornfield from the Insight Meditation Institute and Spirit Rock down in California. And I studied with those people as well. So my background was pretty much in Vipassana meditation. And Osho, and of course I was into hypnosis for a long time, so and physiological psychology, so I had a lot to do with understanding the mind and sort of learning how it worked and how to manage it. And so a lot of this work is based on that kind of information and experience.
So basically your research has a very international and full-bodied flavor to it in that case.
Yeah, I think it
works a lot.
Yeah, it does. It does. And, you know, I was able to work with a lot of people who were spiritual seekers in India in the Osho's ashram for a number of years. I went there and offered my course that has become the Genius of Mystic Psychology now online, and was able to get a lot of input and wonderful support from the spiritual seekers who were there, the disciples who were there, who were after the same question I was. How do you drop your mind? Well, we're misunderstanding that question a great deal. It's not that we have to drop it. In a way, we have to make it our friend so that it works for us. And again, it's a paradox because it's one of the most difficult challenges and obstacles that we have to work our way around if you're on the path to becoming more of a mystic in daily life.
So then, in a way, can one say that if one succeeds in dropping their mind, would they not attain enlightenment?
I got to tell you, I haven't the foggiest idea. I don't even know what enlightenment means anymore. I really don't know. So I don't use that word. And the thing for me is that when people talk about dropping their mind, I don't actually know what it is they mean. Because if you mean you've dropped your attachment to your mind, that I would understand. But I think the goal, in my world anyway, is to be able to be in this world while at the same time you're not in it. I think Jesus, who was a mystic, if you want to look at it the way I do, was saying, be in the world but not of it. Okay, so you have to be in the world. And I think the thing to be clear about is you want to be in the world and live at the same time. This is my goal for the modern life. You want to be in the world and live it. And in addition, also be in the world beyond this world, so that because that's where you receive your guidance and your energy and your the love, the divine love that we're talking about, which is what our world here needs. So it's kind of being in both dimensions at the same time, being both divine and human at the same time. So I get a little bit, I back off a little bit from the idea of dropping the mind. I'm more about shifting our way of looking at the mind so that we can put our attention on what feeds us, because the mind is actually a dualistic thing and it only can give us this or that, if that's what it does. Okay, so I don't know if that answers your question or not. Did it?
No, that, in fact, what you just said was absolutely beautiful, to be in this world and not of it. In fact, in Hindu tradition, there is a god called Shiva, and he said the exact same thing, that be of this world, do your duty, but be outside it as well, in terms of your mental state. So yes. I mean, I do resonate with what you say.
Yeah, and I think what I'm about is trying to help us shift our mental state so that we can stay calm and centered and balanced despite what's happening in life. You know, whether it's good or it's bad, whether it's healthy or unhealthy, because ultimately it's all temporary. That's one of the things that was relevant or predominant in the psychology of the mystics, was that everything changes. Impermanence rules. You know, like if you had a bunch of mystics get together to make a decision, at the head of the table would be impermanence. That would be their primary advisor, impermanence. And, you know, we don't use impermanence as a guide to making our decisions, or to seeing how we relate to something. Oh, well, you know, it's an impermanent thing. It's here. Now it's gone. So one of the major issues from looking at the genius of mystic psychology is that their head advisor in looking at decision-making and problem-solving is impermanence. It's very great, you know, because then that really helps us be in the world but not of it, because we know whatever's here is going to change, because it always does.
And so what direction do you see your research going 5 years from now?
Well, I'll tell you what I would like, and it really isn't up to me where it goes, but what I would like is to have those people that are interested in this kind of next step in their evolution to become aware of this work and to dive into it and use it and to use me while I'm here to answer their questions and, you know, help them understand it in a way that makes sense to them. I know that there are a lot of people on the planet that are confused about polarities. They understand the law of polarity but don't apply it to their daily life, don't understand yet how it shapes and sculpts our daily lives. So there's a lot of people, you know, everybody just wants to get past it all, but you can't. You know, you have to deal with it in order to get out of this world. You have to deal with what's stopping you in this world. And this is what I love about your show. The imperfections is what we think are stopping us from getting out of this world or getting to a different dimension or a different way of looking at things. But it isn't. It's actually the way we're relating to the imperfections that's the problem. So 5 years from now, I would love to have, you know, more and more people become aware of this work so that they can use it, because after you get a handle on opposites, another door opens. And that's when you're in the presence of whatever it is that's there for you that we would call divine. And that's the key for me that makes this so valuable. It actually leads to the opening of another door that you just can't get to if you're still trying to choose one opposite over one experience over its opposite.
And do you have any other books in the pipeline, Ragini?
I'm going to do another poetic book because I wrote a bunch of poems over the last 10 years for students and made a calendar every year. In fact, people can go to my website at raginimichaels.com, and there's still a free calendar there they can download for this year. There's still half a year left, and they have nice pictures and a picture and a beautiful poem on or musing on each page. So I'm going to write another one. I think it's going to be called The Astonishing Beauty of Divine Stillness in Motion.
Okay,
I like these long titles.
Name. That's a beautiful title.
I'm going to be doing that, but other than that, I don't have any other plans for writing another book. That was a lot of work. my hat's off to anyone who tries to write a self-help book. It's hard. But I learned a lot. It was quite a challenge, but I'm very glad that I did it. Yeah.
I'm sure your book will do absolutely great because it's such a beautiful name. I mean, I would definitely be attracted to such a beautiful book.
Good. I'm glad. I'm hoping that that will work because I think the people who will resonate with what I'm doing are people who are serious spiritual seekers who have, you know, have a lot of their life geared around this. And I think it's helpful because a lot of people that I've talked to do well in their meditations and other things, but when they get into actually dealing with their daily lives, they tend to lose their center. And part of that is because the imperfections, the brain is not yet wired to embrace imperfections. And that's what really this is all about.
And apart from RaginiMichaels.com, are there other websites that our listeners can access you at?
There's one other website I have called tohelpyouhelpothers.com, and this lists things that I offer to teach people who are coaches and hypnotherapists and therapists and consultants to help them better succeed in their work, primarily focusing on language and behavioral change skills. So it's, excuse me, it's tohelpyouhelpothers.com.
I think you're an absolutely
And they can go to, I forgot the whole thing, thegeniusofmysticpsychology.com.
Thegeniusofmysticpsychology.com.
Yeah, there's a the in front of it. Thegeniusofmysticpsychology.com will tell you all you want to know about the online training, okay? What it's about, how to get it. It's one of those long pages that shows you all kinds of wonderful things that's included in the training. So feel free to go there. You can take the training. It's not expensive. I think it's $297 for like, I think it's like 77 videos in it. I mean, it's a great... It's a good training. You get unlimited email access to me and a private one-hour session at some point with it. So it's a good thing. If you do it the way I set it up, it takes like 2 months to go through all the videos and stuff. But anyway, it's thegeniusofmysticpsychology.com. I think that's it.
No, that's great because now our listeners know how to access you, your online training, your books, and your work.
And thank you, Vioma, for actually offering me this opportunity to share this work with other people. I really appreciate that. It's hard in today's world to, with so many people doing so many things, to get out what you're doing. So I really appreciate your invitation to be on the show, and I hope you'll have me back sometime. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Ragini, for being on the show with us. And it was an absolutely amazing experience, and I'm sure that we will have you back on the show one day again.
Okay, my dear. Thank you so much. You have a good day.
Thank you. With that said, we conclude this week's episode of Perfectly Imperfect. I'm your host, Vioma Nupur, signing off. Be sure to tune in again next week, and don't forget to check out my new book, Be Perfectly Imperfect, on my website, beperfectly-imperfect.com. Everyone, have an excellent day ahead.
Smallest bones inside my body.